welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Sunday, September 16th, 2012. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is with us again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, hello, hello. You know, let me ask you one thing. I think if anybody who listens to the show and is not a friend of mine on Facebook but would like to friend me on Facebook so they know what, you know, I usually post a lot about the election and other stuff's going on and whatever, post articles that I see or something or whatever. You can't look me up just by my name, but look up my email address. You can send me an invite, ivanbou1@mac.com. Okay, it's just my first name and last name, number1@mac.com. Why there's a one after
is because you screwed yourself.
Story. Yes, I locked myself out of my own email address, and I tried to get Apple to unlock it somehow, and they never could. And that's been going on for like over 10 years. But you know what? I gave up. Okay, so, but anyway.
You're Ivan Bo 1.
Yeah, I'm Ivan Bo 1. Although I'm also Ivan Bo, I just can't get into that one, but that's another story. Anyway, it's probably very obvious right now that I'm really just like absolutely gaga in love with my son. I don't know if you've gotten that impression. Yeah,
you know. I can let's see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I am just yeah. So yeah. So anyway, moving on to other more interesting stuff. We had a lot of stuff happen this week.
This was a busy news week.
It was a busy week all across on the technology front, on the political front, Middle East front. I mean, you pick. We got shit going on.
We got stuff. We got the iPhone 5. We got the violence in the Middle East. We've got an election update. The Fed did this QE3 thing. We've got all kinds of stuff. And on top of all that, we got feedback.
Obviously, people are not going to be listening to this on that date, but it's your birthday today.
Yes, although as I posted, I made a point of posting this online, you know, when you do the calculation properly.
Yeah.
The 41st anniversary of my birth, you go with exact years, the real length of a year, not this bullshit stuff on the calendar,
it was yesterday
on the 15th.
Okay. All right. Well, we're close enough.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for their happy birthday wishes. By the way, I've gotten the usual deluge from Facebook. I've gotten a couple from Google+. I've gotten some other emails. So
I've gotten a couple from Google+. You see, I keep hearing people that Google+, there's more activity going on in it.
Well, here's the thing. I have a couple of family members who have decided that Google+ is their network of choice. So they're on there instead of
quite
Facebook.
Interesting. No, but that's an interesting development in and of itself. But okay.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks everybody. With that, you want to jump straight into it?
Yeah, what the hell.
Okay. Oh, hi Alex. I'm recording with Yvonne right now. So
You
want to talk to? Well, just for a second, okay? Because we're talking about other stuff here. I'll make it so you can hear Yvonne.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
Yeah, the dog's here too.
The dog. Don't talk to me about dogs. Come on. That's very interesting, Alex.
Hey, mommy, daddy. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Yvonne, you want to say hi before I try to...
Hi, Alex. How you doing?
Or have I lost Yvonne?
No, no, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I don't hear Yvonne at all.
Oh, crap.
Hold on.
Found the new bodies.
Ah, come on.
There's Yvonne. Hello.
Yeah, I heard you. I'm sure other people did hear me too, but.
Okay, well, anyway, thank you for joining us real quick, Alex. Can you go back with mommy for right now?
No.
Because Yvonne and I are going to talk about our feedback and about the news.
I said, come to.
Well, I think it's better right now if you go see mommy.
Yeah, you need to go see mommy. We're going to be a little bit busy.
Yeah. Okay, let's pause for just a second, and I'll be right back.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now, and now, and now, and now the break is over.
Okay, here we go. I'm back, Alex is back with his mom. And I realized, of course, the reason I couldn't hear Yvonne when I pulled out the headphones, and I'm like, hey, Yvonne can talk, but I turned down the volume on the speakers.
Ah, okay. Well, I've noticed that I only officially have one friend in Google Plus.
And it's me, right?
Yeah, pretty much. These four people added you to their circles. Okay. Oh, this is annoying. Friends.
Romans, great. Countrymen.
Acquaintances, yeah. Okay, there's like additional people. Anyway,
and
all right.
You can make your own circles with different categories. That was one of the defining features of Google Plus to begin with.
This is fucking annoying. Okay, all right.
Okay, so we got feedback.
Feedback. Okay, so what happened with the feedback?
So, we have feedback from someone who's from Mark, who's been interacting with us quite a bit over the last couple months. I'm not sure how long they've been listening, but over the last couple months, they've been chiming in a few times. So,
I don't think I know Mark, but hi, Mark.
There you go. This is feedback, actually. I got it a few days ago, but it's in reference to two shows ago.
Okay.
Hey, Sam, loved the podcast last week. Make sure you tell Yvonne that your fans are clamoring for more.
Ah!
I listened to the whole thing on Friday, but wanted to give it another listen before I address something.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but I have to take issue with something you corrected Yvonne on. He was right with his statement that a gaffe is different than taking someone out of context. You disagreed and conflated the two. A gaffe, by classic definition, is when you accidentally tell the truth. The other is when you twist someone's words to perpetrate a lie. Example one, out of context, Obama says, if we keep talking about the economy, we'll lose. Damning, unless you realize he was quoting a McCain ad from 2008. Yes. Example two, gaffe. I like firing people that provide services to me. I'm sorry, but there is no other context for this statement. It's clear that the speaker wasn't referring to anything else but having the power over somebody else. Now, I do believe that Romney is as craven as... Do I believe that Romney is as craven as this sounds? Probably not. It is, however, a strikingly arrogant image for a wealthy CEO presidential nominee. Agreed? Now, since this is directed at me, let me respond first, and then you can chime in if you want. No, I don't agree, and here's why.
Well, by the way, I'll tell you what. He's right. You are still very wrong.
No. Here's the key, though. Different people are using different definitions of the word gaffe. Mark is absolutely right that the definition that's been tossed around a few times about accidentally telling the truth, a gaffe is when a politician accidentally tells the truth. If you go by that, then, you know, very few of these are really gaffes.
By the way,
let me go by
the definition of the word, okay, all right? It's a socially awkward or tactless act, okay, all right? Taking something out of context is not a socially awkward or tactless act,
Let me give you the other definition that's very often the one that people mean when they're talking in politics. And I read a blog post even just this morning that used that definition, and let me see if I have it handy. But basically, it's an unforced statement that causes you political trouble, and that covers a lot of things. You know, it's basically just it's a post by Seth Maskett called Party Polarization as Seen Through Two Romney Gaffes. And he has the quote, yes, I recognize the word gaffe means different things to different people. For these purposes, let's just say that a gaffe is an unnecessary utterance that forced the campaign off message for some considerable time period. And I think that's the definition I really mean.
But my point is that here's the thing. The utterances that Obama made in a couple of instances, and the one that we were referring to, which we were referring to about, you know, I think at the point that we were talking about, was the one about the infrastructure, okay?
Yes.
That was a necessary reference. He was talking about the role of government and in building stuff.
Here's the thing.
And then later, let me finish. Then later, it got taken out of context and made into something that came back. But that statement was necessary. He was talking about the role of government and how it works. You can take if you're going to go by that looser definition, shit, man, then you know what? I mean, it's like, look, you can take everything anybody says, take it out of context, and make it turn into a gaffe.
Look.
It can't be that loose.
No.
It's got to be a mistake.
No.
Like when Romney goes and talks about his Cadillacs, like having, you know, three Cadillacs in New York and two Cadillacs in California, is like, which I can't remember, but it was kind of like that.
Yvonne, stop.
Yes.
I said I was going to answer him first and then let you have your turn, and you've been talking nonstop.
All right, okay. Go ahead, sir.
Look, so there are a couple things here. There are different kinds here, but from a political purpose, they serve it serves the same role. And look, there are a couple things here. First of all, the "I like firing people" comment, I believe, was actually taken out of context. There are alternate interpretations, and in fact, what he meant was very clear. He did not mean, "I like being a boss, and I like being able to fire the people who work for me." What he was specifically talking about was, in healthcare, being able to have the choice that if, as a service provider, isn't giving you the service you expect, to fire them and get a different service provider.
Well, then that wasn't the gaffe from him.
Yeah,
I didn't hear that statement. Yeah.
That's what he was talking about in that case. And so, like, I think both of the examples that Mark used are actually things being taken out of context.
Right.
But the key in both of those situations is you took something that you are absolutely right, Yvonne, when you say there is a legitimate political statement to be made there. And people are taking it out of context, and the taking it out of context is really, you know, whatever is the bad act. But there are things that are easier and harder to take out of context in our soundbite culture today.
You're right.
You can take almost anything out of context. However,
I mean, I could make anybody sound like Hitler by taking them out of context.
Of course you could. But there are some things that are easier than others. Like for Mitt Romney's case, you can make that point about wanting to be able to change service providers without saying, "I like firing people," without using those words. In Obama's case, he could make the point about people being dependent on government infrastructure without saying, "You didn't build that." You know, and I know in both cases, if you look at it in the full context, it makes perfect sense and they're making a real point and blah, blah, blah. But they worded in an inartful way that was easy to take advantage of. Now, you can take advantage of anything. You can take anything out of context, but certain things make it really fucking easy. And that's what made these two gaffes, is that by slightly rewording what they said, they wouldn't have given their opponents the political ammunition that came out of this. And that's what makes them gaffes. Now, in both of those, I believe, are actually out of context gaffes. So both of the examples that Mark gave, I believe, are out of context gaffes. There are also the kind that is the accidentally telling the truth kind. And you're right, that is a different kind of gaffe. But I think they're both gaffes because both of them sort of put you behind the political eight ball that you have to suddenly defend this stuff. But there's no question there's two different types here. But I think in both cases, it's like saying something unnecessary that forced you off message. I think that's a good definition of gaffe. Like the thing that Aiken said. That was not a taken out of context. That was completely him saying what he actually believed.
Correct. I pulled back the whole context of the whole thing, and he said that.
Yeah, no, that was 100% him stating his actual real life opinion, not realizing or not caring.
Well, I don't know. I don't even call that a gaffe. The guy wanted to say that. That's what he said. It wasn't even inadvertent.
No, right. Exactly. But that's what... See, the inadvertent part, I don't think that's part of the critical definition. Like, to me...
Right. I agree.
The key here is he didn't have to say that.
mean, it was a major, it was a gaffe.
But the fact that he said it,
because if it goes, if I go by the definition, yeah, it was, you know, a tactless remark, and that one was, yes, incredibly so.
Right, and so you've got these two types. In both cases, basically, it's situations where you say something that then causes you trouble, where you could easily have said something different and not gotten into trouble. To me, that's what a gaffe is. And there are different kinds. There are the kinds where you accidentally say what you mean when you should have kept your mouth fucking shut. And then there are the kinds where you say something that's very easy to take out of context.
So now I'll give the example. I mean, I've got, for example, the other day I had a very close meeting with some people, okay, in my team, and I walked into the meeting, and my starting remarks is that, you know, what the fuck you're doing right now totally sucks.
Good now, start.
I mean, I said it like that. Now, you know, now, let's face it, if I had said that in a public audience with a whole bunch of people looking at them and just dressed them loud like that, that would be a massive gaffe. That's incredibly tactless. You can't do that, okay? But I was in a close group, and I was wanted them to understand what exactly I thought about how they were doing what they were doing right now up to that point. And I just wanted them not to be confused about me thinking, well, you know, you need to do a little better. No. Right now what you're doing just fucking sucks.
Now,
okay?
Now the one thing you have to keep in mind in the political arena is, as much as they would like to think there really is no completely private conversation.
Well, maybe
with their like top advisors.
Exactly,
and stuff
that's what I'm
like
saying.
That.
With your top advisors, that kind of stuff.
Maybe, but like, you know, because we've gotten numerous examples in this campaign cycle and the last, where presidential candidates have been speaking in front of, in small private-ish groups, fundraising, whatever, where or even in like a rope line.
They can't think that is not an environment to be able to say something like that. And you've heard candidates do that, and it's stupid because that is public. I mean,
but we told people they weren't supposed to record this event. Well, too fucking bad. I turned on my iPhone in my pocket, you know?
Exactly.
This is Sam from the future. Just to point out real quick that what you just heard was recorded several days before the latest release of Romney's remarks at a fundraiser that he thought was private, but guess what? It was recorded. Hey, were we right on it or what? Anyway, we'll probably talk about those comments and the aftermath from them this on the next show. But for in the meantime, back to what we were talking about, you know, about gaffes in general. This is future Sam with a brief correction to what medium future Sam said. This was recorded the day before the Mitt Romney 47% comments came out and were released, not several days before. Yeah, I know, minor thing, but it was bothering me that I got it wrong. So, anyway, back to the thing.
Not Sierra. I mean, if you're sitting around with, like, Obama sitting with David Axelrod and he's telling him that Romney's a fucking dickhead, I mean, that's just between him and him. I'm sure that if they're sitting in the Oval Office, the likelihood of it getting out is, like, you know, none.
Small.
Okay? But, you know, you're going with, like, about 100 supporters at a dinner and you say that, well, yeah. It doesn't care what those supporters paid $100,000 per plate. Somehow that's going to get out.
Yeah. I think this is quibbling over words. I don't disagree with Mark at all that there are two different classes here. There absolutely positively is the accidentally telling the truth and revealing your true self versus somebody completely distorting your words.
Right.
But both can be gaffes. Depending on the context and how easily avoidable it was and blah, 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 blah. And again, those two specific examples that he gave, I think, are both out of context because I'll actually defend Romney on those I like to fire people statements. That was unfairly taken out of context as well.
I would too. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think
now he probably actually likes firing people too. I don't know, but that's not
what he was saying. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So, shall we move on?
can we take a little break? I need to do a feeding break here.
No problem. We'll take a break. We'll be back after this. Yvonne, let me know when you're ready to go.
All right. I'll be back in a sec. Come on. Okay. All right, big guy. You think he's finally hungry. All right. Come on. Hang on.
And we're back.
Hello, okay. Yvonne. Hello.
All fed and happy?
No, he's not fed and happy. I'm feeding him right now.
Okay, well, happy.
Yeah.
Well, and as some of you may have heard during that last segment, Alex came back in here, but then Mom came into the room, and he threw himself down on the floor to, like, make himself small so he couldn't be picked up, and then Mom picked him up and dragged him out of here crying. So, you know. Oh, well. Before we move on to the next topic, a couple of more potential gaffes. One humorous and one that, you know, anyway. Senator Santorum, remember him?
Oh, yeah. What did he say?
He had a nice quote from a couple days ago. Have you seen this quote?
No, I have not. But being that it's Santorum, I can't wait.
Okay. He was telling an audience at a hotel yesterday or the day before, I forget exactly when, but here's the key quote, and yes, I will take this out of context. We will never have the elite smart people on our side. So remember this. If you're smart...
You're not going to vote for Santorum.
You're not going to vote for Santorum. And he has no pretense. They're not after the smart people.
They want all the stupid people to vote for him.
Because, of course, the smart people know better. And apparently Santorum is okay with that and expects it.
Oh, boy, genius.
Now, I did say I was taking out of context. Not much, though, but it was in the context he was saying we will never have the media on our side ever. We will never have the elite smart people. And I think you could sort of put air quotes around smart in terms of interpreting this properly. You know, we will never have the elite people on our side. We will never have the quote-unquote smart people, as in, you know, sort of the self-declared people who are smug and think that themselves are smug, as smart. I think that's the right way to interpret this statement, as opposed to on face value saying, hey, the smart people don't like us.
But you see, the thing is that it really is revealing when you say that, doesn't it? You know, because what that means is that you somehow... I mean, to me, it's like some kind of inferiority complex that he has, and with good reason. I mean, the guy's a fucking moron.
Well, remember, this is the same guy that said, you know, going to college was just indoctrination for the liberal viewpoint.
Correct. Yeah. So, you know what? Him saying that is not really, you know...
Surprising. Anyway, but like I said, this is another one of the kinds of statements that very easily, if you just read the words... Sounds very bad, but I'm pretty sure, and I haven't seen video of him doing it, maybe it's out there, but I'm pretty sure if you properly interpret how he meant it, you got smart in air quotes. He's talking about people who are all, hoity-toity thinking of themselves as smart, as opposed to, you know, hey, intelligent people obviously aren't going to go for Republicans. That's not what he meant.
Right, right.
You know, and that's clearly
I mean, let's face it. If you take you look at the numbers, I mean, I think that there was a demographic profile that showed that basically, I mean, most people...
The more education you have, the more likely you are to vote Democratic, yes.
Pretty much.
There have been studies that show that. Now, that is not to say there are not highly intelligent people...
Who didn't go to college. Let's face it, Steve Jobs didn't finish school,
That's not where I was going. I was going to say that they're highly intelligent people, highly educated people who support Republicans. So it's... Yes, there is a...
Yeah, but I'm talking about percentages. I'm not talking about absolute... Right.
Anyway, and there are smart, intelligent arguments for certain parts of the conservative viewpoint. It's just they've gotten swamped inside this morass of all the stuff that's
you've gotten a morass of arguments like by morons like Santorum himself. So yes. Anyway,
the other gaffe that there's been some talk about is Obama. Well, I guess let's jump into the foreign policy stuff. Because this all ties into that, because there were gaffes on, quote-unquote, gaffes on all sides regarding the events in the Middle East this week.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to give a quick rundown of what happened first, and then let's talk about it.
Well, apparently there was a video, which I haven't seen, but there was some video on YouTube published in the United States, which apparently was very inflammatory, to a group of Muslims. I guess it said some very derogatory things about the Prophet Muhammad. I mean, I don't know the exact. I mean, I read a little bit, but let's face it, I didn't even go and watch the video. I was thinking about. It's still available on YouTube, as far as I understood,
yes, it is.
Because YouTube is not taking it down, because that's been a controversial thing as well. You know, so the video is up there, and many imams in a few different countries were preaching to people saying that America had published this video and had basically inflamed groups in different countries. And so, you know, in one place where apparently they went and they attacked the consulate in Benghazi, and the American ambassador to Libya happened to be there at that time and was killed. And there were attacks also in Cairo and in Tunisia and in Yemen and a couple of different places where – you know, there's been because of this video. Now, I will say this: that the Libyans came out with a statement, like I think it was like late yesterday, saying that it was Al Qaeda apparently that did the attack in Benghazi, and
that's been going back and forth. It's unclear whether
it's
it was a big,
that,
a big organized thing or it was more spontaneous. They've arrested a bunch of people at this point. Anyway.
They've arrested a bunch of people, and, you know, we don't know. But basically, I mean, it's been like right now. I know that a lot of the more violent protests calmed down. Like, well, they weren't literally like they calmed down. I mean, you know, in Egypt, finally, the U.S. put pressure under government, and they finally cleared the streets. And Libya's been, you know... They've taken some action in order to, you know, like they said, they had 4 arrests. Also in Yemen, the police went in, and they actually, the U.S. government gave permission for the Yemeni police to actually be inside the embassy and to clear them of the demonstrators. But I think that also a lot of the reasons why they were able to very closely get into the compounds was because the U.S., in anticipation of the fact that some of this activity would happen, had actually ordered a lot of personnel and, you know, to not be at the embassy because they expected activity because of the video. As a matter of fact, that there's been a lot of controversy. Everybody was saying that the Egyptian embassy went and had issued an apology regarding the video or a statement. I can't remember exactly how the statement is worded.
This is a key to some of the controversy here.
Right.
Let me get this up because this is probably important to get the exact text on. That didn't get it. Anyway, while I find this, look, their statement wasn't an apology for the video. It was basically something along the lines of It was a statement intended to sort of calm things down.
Right, right.
And as part of that, you know, they said that, you know, they didn't agree with this kind of video or whatever, something like that.
Right.
And so this was called out by a lot of people as not defending free speech. Which wasn't exactly what was going on.
Well, that's not true. I mean, just because the government issues a statement saying that, you know, we don't support that video doesn't mean that we're abridging free speech. I mean, that's one of the things that goes back to the fact that the White House had asked YouTube to review the video to see if there's anything that they could do, but yet at the same time, they didn't actually ask Google to take down the video. And so far, they haven't.
The government did ask YouTube to review it, which I think they shouldn't have, but...
Well, I know. Well, they... It's a thin line, let's face it. I mean, you know, I know. But, well, they could have reviewed it and found that there was some other reason why they could have taken it down, a copyright violation.
But even so, it's intervention where it wasn't necessary. This is Sam from the future, jumping in real quick just to say, you know, in this original conversation, as I'm listening to it again while I'm putting it together, I'm like, we just blew past this free speech issue and started to talk about, you know, all the implications and blah, 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 blah. And this is one of the areas that is usually, you know, one of the things I get really worked up about. You know, I'm very much a free speech absolutist. And in this case, YouTube did not take it down in the U.S., but they did take it down in a lot of Middle Eastern countries. There are countries all over the world that restrict speech that is offensive to one religion or another. And the Obama administration did effectively ask YouTube to look at this and see if they could please take it down. And all of this, I think, is incredibly inappropriate. Like I said, I'm a free speech absolutist. I absolutely believe that, you know, laws against hate speech are wrong, that people should be able to do all the hate speech they want. They should even be able to, quote unquote, incite violence, which is sometimes where a line is drawn. Glenn Greenwald did an article, I believe in The Guardian, I forget the title right now, on this subject in the last couple days that I think was very instructive too. He points out quite rightly that, hey, if you actually do incite, you do have restrictions against, you know, advocating the use of violence, well then, hey, any political debate on whether or not a country should go to war is off limits. Because guess what that is? That's advocate, at least on the side that's advocating war, it's advocating the use of violence to meet some goal. So it's ridiculous. All speech, and I do get worked up about this stuff. Speech is important. Speech about ideas like religion, like politics, like you know, any of this kind of stuff is the absolute top of the rung in terms of what should be protected. You know, I think everything should be protected, almost everything. And my limits are, you know, of the fire in the crowded theater stupid example kind. And even then, God damn it, you should be able to say it. But certainly the stuff that has ramifications for, you know, you should be able to say that a religion is stupid. You should be able to make fun of a religion. You should be able to talk about how the king is a jackass. You know, all of these things are you know, the core of the most important type of speech out there. There should be absolutely zero restrictions on that kind of stuff. And yes, that means I like rulings like Citizens United that says, God damn it, yes, corporations should be able to put things out there all they fucking want. Because restriction on political speech is dangerous. It should not be restricted at all. Anyway, there's my hobby horse that I didn't insert, you know, in real time. I just felt I had to say something, but we'll undoubtedly talk about those kinds of issues at some point again in the future. In the meantime, back to the stuff we did talk about, and, you know, sorry for the roundabout thing, blah, 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 but I just needed to put in a little rant about that. You guys understand, right? Right? You understand? Maybe?
It's a thin line. Yeah, I know.
Here's the statement by the embassy that was, so there's a timeline, by the way. July 2nd, the filmmaker initially posted a trailer, and so it was out there for a while. September 5th, attention was drawn to the video in an Arab language blog post and some English newsletters by an anti-Muslim Egyptian Coptic, Egyptian-American Coptic Christian, specifically. And then September 9th, Egyptian television aired a scene from the film. September 11th, in anticipation of uproar, the U.S. Embassy issues a statement.
Right.
And here's what that statement was. The Embassy of the United States in Cairo condemns the continuing efforts by misguided individuals to hurt the religious feelings of Muslims, as we condemn efforts to offend believers of all religions. Today, the 11th anniversary of the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks in the United States, Americans are honoring our patriots and those who serve our nation as the fitting response to the enemies of democracy. Respect for religious beliefs is a cornerstone of American democracy. We firmly reject the actions by those who abuse the universal right of free speech to hurt the religious beliefs of others.
I think it's a pretty good statement.
So that was the statement. The only thing that, you know, was perhaps missing from it is something very specifically saying, you know, while we believe that this speech is offensive, we believe strongly in the rights of the filmmakers to make the statement. Something right. along that lap was missing and probably should have been there, but was not. But anyway, so what happened then? Then the protesters started, in Egypt. They destroyed a flag inside. They came in. Blah, blah. By the way, this is I'm reading from a timeline of the attacks in Libya and Egypt and the responses by Brian Butler on Talking Points Memo. If anybody wants to look it up, anyway, the U.S. Embassy later stood by its initial statement, and then blah 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 blah. Anyway, things blew up out of hand. They eventually retracted that and eliminated a bunch of Twitter
posts. I don't
know
what the heck is retractable about that damn statement.
Basically what happened is that because they got criticism for it, the State Department in Washington and the Obama administration released another statement that was sort of more finely tuned to sort of say, we condemn the violence, we also defend free speech, we also blah, 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 and then they took down the original statement. Mm. But anyway, like
it really wasn't like so much a retraction. It just basically took that statement, it just basically fine-tuned it and released a more finely tuned version.
Washington specifically said that the Egyptian embassy was talking out of line. They had made a statement that they shouldn't have made.
Okay.
And so Washington put out their version, which was better, I guess.
Which is slightly better.
But which was also after the fact and after the hubbub, so the hindsight, you know. Anyway, the Romney campaign and various came out very early in this process, said, you know, they're outraged by the attacks, but then went straight to, it is disgraceful that the Obama administration's first response was not to condemn the attacks, but to sympathize with those who waged the attacks.
Which, of course, was a big mistake, because that statement had been out before all this shit happened.
The statement had been out before it happened, but even more to the point, that statement was not sympathizing with those who waged the attacks. I just read you the statement. Did that sound like sympathy for those waging
Fuck
the attacks?
No.
No.
No, not even remotely close.
You know, and so, and this is the, and Romney started getting shit for that almost as soon as he put it out. But then the next morning he doubled down on it. And that's,
And I will say this. I think, look, the reason why Romney was doing all this shit is because, let's face it, he knows he's behind.
Yes.
Okay. I think because normally in most of these foreign policy type of situations, it's been customary that presidential candidates actually, for the most part, don't get into it like this.
Yes.
Okay? That's been, you know, historically what's happened. I think Romney right now is – I mean, I can smell a little bit – when I saw that he started doing this, what I could sense is a little bit of sense of desperation on Romney's part, because he knows that on the foreign policy front, he's getting killed by Obama. All the polling data shows that they believe that Obama could do a better job on foreign policy than he did, and so therefore he saw an opportunity
They jumped on this because it fits in with Romney's narrative of Obama being an apologist and apologizing for the United States and blah, blah, blah. And so they jumped on it. They jumped on it, and they jumped on it hard, and they doubled down. And then meanwhile, even conservatives were going, really? Maybe he should have just waited a little bit or been a little quiet. And
I think it was just I'm telling you, it's desperation. It's desperation time right now. You saw the polling data come out this week. I mean, you know.
We'll do an election update later in the show. But yeah, I mean, things have not been looking good for Romney, you know, in terms of how the polls are looking, how the flow of the election is going. So he needs, like, to win, he needs a major fuck-up by Obama or, like, some sort of Hail Mary pass that does something extraordinary for him. Mm-hmm. Or just, you know, an incredible series of a run of good luck with, like, you know, bad stuff happening to Obama or vice versa. So he looks at this and says, hey, here's something we can jump on. Here's something that fits into our narrative of why the Obama administration sucks. And so let's go. And then, you know, but, you know, there are a couple things here. One, he started making these statements before the events, you know, had like hours, you know, there was still like sort of fog of war stuff going on. We didn't know really what had all happened. Like, for instance, it was not yet public that an ambassador had been killed. At that point, it was only, you know, the only thing that was public was a couple staff members had been killed. Not to minimize the deaths of the staff members at all, but like it blew up bigger once it was an ambassador who died, you know, and, you know, not all the facts were known yet. There was a lot of uncertainty. There were a lot of things going on. And so this, a lot of people brought up the criticism of, hey, you know, this is the 3 a.m. phone call test, you know, to use Hillary Clinton's old analogy from 4 years ago.
Right.
And Romney failed because a lot of what you sometimes have to do in these situations is, despite all kinds of people clamoring for you to like jump on it and say shit and rattle the sabers or whatever, sometimes the right thing to do is wait a little bit, find out all the facts, understand the situation, think about it a little bit, and then move forward. And right. Then, by the way, once you do move forward, not all of the correct actions are necessarily going to be, you know, go on TV and bang your fist against the table.
Right.
You know, there might be a lot of, you know, behind the scenes things that are actually more important to get done, and the banging the fist on the table might actually make the situation worse. You know, and that's a call you have to make. And I don't know. I'm not, I obviously don't have access to all the inside information about what's going on, but certainly the impression that came out was that Romney rushed out here to make a political point in an area where, you know, lots of people were saying, hey, look, when America is under attack in whatever form, the right response is to say, you know, we sympathize for those killed. We stand by those in blah, blah, blah. And, you know, whatever. Like in some cases, you know, the history you mentioned previous political candidates, the opposition party has actually just said, you know, in times of crisis, we have one president. I support the president.
Right. Exactly. Pretty much. That's it.
You know, and so it looked uncouth for Romney to sort of stick his foot in it the way he did. And as it turns out, the facts of what he was saying were even not quite right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then the drumbeat became even heavier. And like I said, you had all sorts of conservative commentators even coming out here and saying, I wish Romney had shut the fuck up.
Right. But like I said, you know, I think that they made a quick calculation that, I don't know, maybe this is our opening. And, you know, no, well.
Yeah, and I've noticed he's quieted down a little bit since then.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, some folks were still out there defending him, but it was very small. Most of the folks you expect to be out there defending him really weren't. And now you did see Obama made a statement in an interview a little bit later when he was asked if Egypt is an ally, saying, well, they're not really an ally. They're not an enemy, but they're not really an ally later either. And people jumped all over him for that, especially the people who were sort of the people who were still defending Romney were like, hey, look, you know, Obama screwed up, too. Obama made a gaffe about this stuff. He was also shooting first and thinking later, which is what Obama said about Romney. Because officially, Egypt is classified by the State Department as a non-NATO ally or something like this. Mm-hmm. But I've seen a lot of comments just this morning, and some of them were published yesterday. But I talking about and the biggest analysis of this is Juan Cole, I believe. Mm-hmm. Let me get the article name. Of course, I put away the thing where I had this. There we go. I like to start cite the articles when I can, regardless, Juan Cole put out an article talking about this, and a couple of other people have echoed him. That look, this wasn't a gaffe. This was completely intentional. The Egyptian administration was
with their arms crossed while the fucking embassy's being attacked in the U.S.
They weren't doing anything. They weren't putting out statements condemning it. They weren't blah blah blah. And so Obama comes out and basically says this, and you know, a couple hours later.
There's Egyptian troops outside the embassy tear gassing these people and clearing the street.
And the Egyptian president is making comments about it and how he condemns it and blah, blah, blah. This was a mode of putting pressure on the Egyptians, saying, look, this isn't automatic. You know, you act up, we're going to stop treating you with preference.
Right.
You know, and, you know, other people also pointed out that there were, you know, the Egyptian administration was also being reminded of the fact that a significant chunk of the Egyptian economy, I don't know how big, but it's not trivial, is tourism. This kind of thing is bad for tourism.
Big time. It's one of their, absolutely.
And, you know, anyway. And one more gaffe to talk about that's also been or potential gaffe, I should say, that has been talked about in this and this one isn't really a gaffe, but another sort of thing that people on the right have been calling a foreign policy misstep. There are two of these that I should mention. One is Netanyahu's government putting out a thing that he had asked for a meeting with Obama, and Obama had said no due to scheduling. It said no. And Obama's administration came back and said, you never asked us for a meeting. And that there were, you know, there were scheduling conflicts or whatever. And people were criticizing, well, but the time you wanted for, you know, Obama's going on Letterman. You know, Letterman's more important than Netanyahu.
And I actually, during the election, I'm going to say yes.
And so, look, and then the critic, and I think the response here is this is also a place where this wasn't. Yeah, people were criticizing this as Obama not putting the proper priorities on the relationship with Israel. And my reaction is, no, that's bullshit. This was also completely intentional. This is Obama, you know, telling Netanyahu. He's telling Netanyahu to shut the fuck up. He's heard all he wants from him and doesn't need to have an in-person meeting for Netanyahu to go and once again tell Obama that he's not doing what Netanyahu wants him to do. Obama knows that. He's not doing the things that Netanyahu wants for, you know, well-thought-out reasons. Now, you may or may not agree with Obama's approach to the Israeli administration and to the situation with Israel, Iran, Palestinians, et cetera, but I think it's very much intentional. This is not like the Obama administration accidentally not scheduling a meeting with Netanyahu. Or not scheduling a meeting with Netanyahu because they're like, they want to go on Letterman. This is absolutely 100% intentional, you know, sending a message to Netanyahu, just like they were sending a message to the Egyptians with the ally comment. You know, this is not a mistake. They're doing this on purpose, you know. While we're talking foreign policy, before we move on to other topics, the one other thing I've seen a lot of conservatives harping on in the last few days is something about Obama skipping national security briefings and saying, you know, Obama wasn't even paying attention to this. There were security briefings in the days leading up to what happened in Libya, and Obama didn't even attend the meetings. I've seen a variety of commentary on this, explanations from the White House. I've seen the criticisms of it as well. Look, what this looks like, he gets the presidential daily brief every day. Sometimes it's in writing. Sometimes it's an in-person briefing.
Okay.
It depends on the schedule and what's going on that day. So if Obama is around traveling, guess what? It's probably going to be in writing. If it's really important, they're going to do it in person. Now, somebody had put out with a report or something that analyzed the schedules of the last two presidents and found out that, you know, almost all the time, George W. Bush had these in person.
Mm-hmm.
Obama has them in person sometimes, has them in writing sometimes, and the percentage that are in person is a lot smaller than George W. Bush.
Okay.
And look, and so they're
but just, that's the style of people, how sometimes people work.
Bingo! At this point, Curmudgeon's Corner will indulge itself in a very rare episode of self-censorship. One or another of your Curmudgeon's Corner hosts said something that they immediately regretted. And so we stopped and we'll start again without that little bit. You'll just have to think about and guess which one of us may have said something and what we may have said. And we'll just leave that to your imagination. In the meantime, back to the show.
Look, people work differently, okay? All right? And I, you know, I'm, for example, I'm a guy that's out in the field all the time, okay? I've seen other people that do a similar job like mine, and they, you know, they work, you know, they work differently. Sometimes, they, you know, they work in the office all the time. It's a very, you know, it's a very, it's, you know, people have different work styles, and some people make it effective one way or another, okay? George W. Bush decided that, you know, he apparently was a guy that didn't travel as much, apparently, as Obama, so therefore he got...
And it's not even the travel. I mean, you can have the in-person briefing when you're traveling, too. It's just less convenient for people.
It's just less convenient, but, right? You've got a tighter schedule. It's just... As long as you get the information, let's face it, I'm a guy that I get a written report. I can read a written report in like 15 minutes, and a lot of times I get a lot more out of it than if I get somebody giving me a fucking briefing, okay? Because I'm going to... I mean... Now, unless it's a complicated subject, it's something whatever, and like I need some additional details, and when I ask certain questions,
and you want to do some back and forth and Q&A,
exactly.
And blah, blah, blah.
And then I'll definitely, instead of like, because, and I do that sometimes. Sometimes I have, I just have people send me briefings on what happened. Sometimes I say, shit, this got complicated. We need a conference call right now.
And look, it's 100% style. People work in different ways. Some people like in person, some people like in writing, some people like visual, some people like verbal. This is not, one is not necessarily better or worse than the other.
It's just different.
And from all reports that I've read about Obama, he, despite being a politician, he is not really a super people person. He likes sort of, you know, he likes to read the stuff. He likes to do things, he doesn't like to do the glad handling and talking to everybody and blah, blah, blah. He wants to get the information he does needs and makes a decision and blah, blah, blah. So look, there's a style issue here. And you know, I've also same thing. People have said he doesn't listen to the military. And it sounds like some of that is at least he's not having all those meetings with all those people. I heard complaints, you know, from the right wing a few weeks ago talking about, well, he's not having like these he doesn't go golfing with Bonnier.
Right.
You know,
it's not his style. I don't go golfing, for example. I got other people do this job. The fucking guys just, they do a lot of golf and they meet people that way. And that's okay. I mean, I get that. But I, for example, I don't like going out to play golf. I'd rather be at a bar having a few drinks and talking to the person. But that's me. There's a lot of other people that go into a bar having new drinks and talk. They can't work that way. I, you know what, like one of the meetings I had, I said it was like 5:30 in the afternoon. I said, oh, fuck this. I'm not doing here at the office. Come on, I'll take you to the bar. We'll have a couple of drinks. We'll talk about this. So we spent an hour and a half talking about the subject, but we did it there. It's a style thing. George W. Bush, for example, didn't drink. So obviously he wouldn't have taken out somebody to discuss what I was discussing with a guy at a bar.
I mean, look. So anyway, bottom line, different style differences. The other thing people have said is, oh, my God. Look how much time Obama is spending campaigning instead of running the damn country. And
what are they fucking kidding? Okay.
And I sort of like slapped my forehead and I'm like, okay, look, there are a couple of important factors to keep in mind here. One is that first of all, you know, he may be traveling, he may be doing fund revels, but the presidency does not stop when you leave the Oval Office.
That's for damn sure.
You know, the technology...
Or on vacation or anything. Even though we got all... I that sometimes went and got on case on G.W. Bush about how much vacation it took. Look, it's not that he was taking that much fucking vacation. Let's face it. When he was in Crawford in that ranch, it's not like he stops, like, doing the shit that has to be taken care of the White House. Or like when his father was a Kenny Bunkport. Okay.
Everywhere these men, look, the bottom line, the presidency, regardless of which party you are and what the reputation, even the people who have like reputations for being kind of laid back, and Ronald Reagan, I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
You know, even those presidents, this is an intense, high stress job that never, ever leaves you.
That's absolutely right.
You know, and that's just as true for Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Barack Obama. The job goes with them fucking everywhere.
Yep.
You know, and they're doing this stuff. And, you know, he may be at a fundraising event or whatever. But
on the way there and on the way out, on the plane there and everything, the presidency is always going on. From when you wake up to the moment you go to bed.
I mean, remember at the moment, you know, the SEAL team launched to go get Osama bin Laden, fucking Obama was giving the White House Correspondents' Dinner speech and making jokes about Donald Trump.
Right.
You know, maybe not the exact moment it launched. I forget the timeline, but it was all going down that night.
Right.
And he left there and went right to the Situation Room.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and that's how the presidency works, and that's not an Obama specific thing. That's
for every president.
That's for every president. And you know, so the flip side of this equation is what Obama is doing in terms of splitting his time between campaigning and, you know, sort of for Obama things versus being president stuff, by no means unusual. This is absolutely typical and normal for every freaking president. And I've heard some people saying, "But we're in such critical times now." Oh, give me a fucking break. You know, look, yes, there are challenges going on. There are, and by the way, some of this is paraphrasing a Facebook conversation I had with somebody earlier in the week. Yes, there are critical events going on right now, but there are always critical events going on. And these aren't actually all that severe when you take them into historical context. I mean, let's say, okay, economy. Sure, the economy is not great, but even just a few years ago, it was a hell of a lot worse than it is now.
Yep.
Let alone if you talk about the Great Depression or anything, or previous big events prior to that. On international affairs, sure, we got Al-Qaeda out there.
We're not at World War II.
We're not at World War II. We're not even at fucking Vietnam.
Right.
And you know, I don't mean to diminish Vietnam. You know,
well, I'm saying the opposite. Vietnam was far more of an intense conflict. We had far more troops, far more money as a percentage of GDP invested in it. I mean, we had casualties. We had body bags coming back every day.
And
50,000, over 50,000 American soldiers died, for God's sakes. Listen, it would take another 30 years of this war at the rate it's going, 40 years to get that many dead.
And in terms of being an existential threat, like, okay, Al-Qaeda is a nuisance, but they aren't the Nazis.
No. Or the Japanese.
or the Japanese during World War II. I mean,
neither
one is, and you could argue whether the Nazis eventually would have tried to go after the U.S. directly or just taken over Europe, blah, 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 counterfactual history, whatever.
You know, there's a lot of evidence that they sought to do that, okay? And they had thought about it.
Anyway, the bottom line is these times are not all that extraordinarily when you look into history. So it's perfectly legitimate that, like, the person I was arguing with on Facebook was like, you know, Obama should, like, you stop campaigning and concentrate on this stuff and because it's so critical. Really? Come on. No president, you know, actually, there are two examples I can give that are counterexamples, but almost no president has curtailed their campaigning activity in order to go deal with being president.
Let's give an example. Roosevelt curtailed his fucking campaign during World War II? Think not.
The two exceptions I could think of were Carter and Johnson. Johnson decided not to run for the presidency.
But Johnson decided not to seek re-election. Okay? That was one. Okay? And
he also, by the way, knew he would probably lose. That was also a factor. But
right.
Although his official reason was he was going to concentrate on Vietnam. And Carter, you know, okay, he had the Iran-Hostage crisis to deal with, and he decided to concentrate, and, you know, hey, it worked out well for him, I guess.
Yeah, and everybody agrees that that was one of the worst mistakes he ever did. The fact that, you know, in his presidency, how he focused on the hostages the way that it was. How he basically held the whole nation hostage for 300 days.
Anyway, I think we've yammered on about this stuff long enough.
Okay, so let's go into the polling data.
Let's take a break. Summarize this real quick. The foreign policy crises, Romney seemed to have stepped in it.
Crises.
Anyway,
with an I, then crisis with an E, not crises. Anyway.
Romney seems to have stepped in it. We'll see how much of an impact it has on the polls. I've heard a lot of people saying that, you know, this is the end. This is a Romney's death spiral. I think that's a big exaggeration. I think
it's an exaggeration.
I think most things, this will be another factor in the mix, but this will blow over. You know, I'm on record as saying that I think Romney's peaked, but I don't think you'll see this as like the sudden day where it was all over. Anyway, we'll be back after this break. We'll do the quick election update. And, you know, we've been going a while, but maybe talk about iPhone. We'll be back after this. And we're back. Bottom line election, my 2 second update, and then we'll move on to other topics. In my models, we are back at Obama 332 to 206. And in my blog post on Friday, September 14th, I pointed out that since April 1st, on 74% of the days in that time period, it's looked like Obama 332, Romney 206. It has been remarkably stable. It's popped up a little bit, it's popped down a little, but most of the time, it's been right fucking there. It's been really stable. There hasn't been a lot of movement across that center line, and Romney's never been ahead. This is looking really damn good for Obama. Romney can still win if he absolutely sweeps all the close states, but that's pretty darn unlikely. But I also pointed out that it is possible to see big moves. 4 years ago today, or 4 years ago when I did this post on September 14th, 2008, the state of the polls was actually showing a 269 to 269 tie, and Obama went on to win 365 to 173.
Wasn't this right around when McCain decided to suspend the campaign?
Yeah. That stuff was happening. So in the last month and a half of the campaign, last time around, 96 electoral votes moved over to Obama's side of the line. So big moves are possible, in short amounts of time.
But there were two factors I remember at that time. One was he picked Palin. And at first, the Palin bump turned into Palin being, oh my God, what the fuck did this asshole do? Okay, and that started being a big negative.
This is the key. A big move like this is, how do you get a big move like this? The person who's ahead has to majorly fuck up.
And then the McCain campaign suspension.
Yeah, so in both cases, last time around, you can basically map that big move to McCain fucked up.
Yeah.
So if Obama does a major series of fuck ups in the next month and a half, Romney could still win.
Right.
So you still have that possibility open there, but something has to happen to move things in Romney's direction. And it seems like what has to happen is more than just normal campaigning. There has to be some event of some sort that makes people doubt Obama towards
this Romney. Is the reason why how this stuff in the Middle East right now plays out in the coming weeks, I think, is a critical test for the Obama campaign. Because it is a significant crisis right now that's developed out there. And right now it's calmed down. Okay, but even the White House is girding for the fact that this may not stay that way.
Yeah, there could be more.
And that could have a significant impact if this somehow turns significantly worse, over the next few weeks, and the White House can't get its handle around it.
Right. I mean, and there have been more threats against embassies across a variety of countries. There have been things going on. There have been attacks on American forces in Afghanistan that sort of hit home and hit.
Yeah, there were three Marines killed last night. Yeah,
I mean, not like there aren't people dying over there all the time, but there were, major attacks recently. And, things could blow up further internationally. We could get additional really bad news economically. We could do this. We could do that. There are things that could happen. A major Obama scandal could erupt of something right. We haven't even heard of today, who knows? Things can happen to change a race really quickly in the end. But as we get closer and closer to the end, what has to happen has to become more and more extreme to get Romney where he needs to be.
Right. And that's that part. So you talked a little bit and touched a little bit on the economy. So I wanted to touch a little bit on what Bernanke did.
QE3.
So,
and we're not talking about an ocean liner.
No, we're definitely not. Okay. So Bernanke this week, what he announced was an open-ended quantitative easing. Okay, so basically, so people understand what quantitative easing means versus, say, the usual Fed easing. Fed easing in general has always meant taking rates down, what the Federal Reserve loans to banks. Okay, so but the problem is right now that rates are almost zero, so there isn't anywhere to take them down in order to try to spur further the banks and people to go out and invest. Okay, so what the Fed's strategy overall is, and I know that people keep complaining, it hurts savers. Yeah, and intentionally the Fed knows that they're doing that, but they're doing that intentionally. The only way to get people to go and like business to move in the Fed's mind that they can take action on, okay, because it's part of their mandate, okay, is by somehow putting more money out there. And the way you put more money out there is you force basically they take loans off, they take bonds and other things off the street, reduce the investment, reduce how many debt or low risk investments are out there. So people have to go and fucking invest the money on something else. Okay. Take a risk and spur the economy. Okay. Well, at the same time, the cost of borrowing the money for that is going to be lower. Okay. So you've got, so people can borrow cheaply and invest and earn bigger returns. That's it. Okay. That's what they're doing. And
by the way, the key here is it's increasing the money supply because and quote unquote printing money because they do this with money that doesn't actually exist.
Correct. They're going out there from the printing press. They're going out there and taking bonds off the street. So when they offer a guy the money for the bond, he has to take the cash goes out there and they've got to do shit. Well,
let me ask one question. Why is it that when they do this, why is it buying bonds with the fake money the way they do it, opposed to buying something else or just inserting money into people's bank accounts?
Because the Fed balance sheet has certain restrictions. I mean, they can't be just simply going out there and buying stocks. They are restricted to the number of instruments they can buy. One of the instruments that they can buy for the most part without any problems is buying U.S. Treasury.
But why do they have to buy anything? Why can't they just give out money? I've read in the last week they've never done this, but they are actually authorized. One of the things they can do that they have the technical and legal authority to do so is they can just inject money into bank accounts.
Because the way of doing it by buying these bonds out there on the street is something that you can undo later. All right. Okay. What they are doing is a temporary action in which they're just fiddling around with the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. Okay. They're using the balance sheet. So they put this money out there later on when the economy improves. What they're saying is the economy will improve. We'll start selling off these bonds. And you know what? It's like nothing happened because we can take this money out. Okay.
Right.
If you give that money out, it's out there. It stays. Period. Yeah. They want to be able to, at some point, if they see inflation or other things in the economy heating up, they want to be able to take the money back out.
Whereas if they just said, hey, we're going to add $5,000 to every bank account in the United States.
That's inflationary.
Right.
Very much so. Easily so. versus the other one, you can, because this one you can go, you can put the money out there, but you know what? You can take it back out. That money that they put out there is never coming back if they just put $5,000 in everybody's bank account.
Okay. Continue.
Okay. But basically, that's it. But the one thing about it is, you know, everybody is, you know, well, for the most part, I don't know why the hell now the Republicans have a debt set that the chairman of the Federal Reserve is some kind of a treasonous dick for trying to spur the economy.
Because if the economy gets better, it'll help Obama get reelected. What are you thinking, Yvonne?
But you know what? I have been, you know, look, in all my adult life, I don't remember the Federal Reserve chairman being so vilified, okay, ever. And being, you know, held out like this as some kind of a treasonous dick that is, like, you know, fucking with the country. You know, I that's what I guess I don't get. I remember when Paul Volcker, you know, and I remember this, I mean, from that time, but back in the early 80s, I remember, it, you know, he jammed rates all the way up to 20+%, okay? And I guess there was a lot of complaining, but he did that because inflation was out of control in the 70s, and the only way to kill it was by doing that, okay? But I don't – maybe they did back at that time because that was a very controversial time, but I don't recall the kind of vitriol that was happening right now in terms of calling Paul Volcker the kind of words that they're calling Bernanke right now, okay? You know, as I said to somebody this week that was, like, complaining about Bernanke – and I'm like saying, you know what? My thing is this. Unlike the politicians, okay, that we have, Ben Bernanke does not have the luxury to just sit down and just say, fuck it, I'm not going to do my mandate.
Right.
I don't. I got an economy that's not growing the way it should be. I got employment that's stuck. And I've got a mandate of full employment, price stability. There's, like, a couple of things one of them is moving the economy. He's seeing that it's not happening, and he's got to use the tools he has in order to do it. And he doesn't have the luxury that our politicians have had really in the last 2 years, where they basically punted in the economy just waiting for the fucking presidential election, because that's what they did. And Bernanke doesn't have that luxury, okay? Or at least he doesn't take his responsibility lightly. I guess he could just sit around and just let the economy just implode, but that's basically not following his mandate. And he knows he can't. So,
yeah,
you know.
I okay. Know. Very exciting. So, yeah. Bottom line, I guess, do you think this is going to work? Are we going to see effects in the next couple months?
I think it'll help. I mean, I think that it will help. I mean, I don't know if this is the total answer, because the problem that we've got, you know, the Fed has been pumping money into the economy over the last couple of years, okay, consistently, okay? But the problem that we've had is not that the Fed has been pumping money, it's just that the banks, you know, people are still unwilling to lend. Now, what they're doing is, look, what most people have been doing is, this is the point, everybody's just been, like, hogging U.S. treasuries like they're, like, a fucking lifeboat. They don't want to let go. So the Fed's basically just going out there and fucking putting money down there. Okay, look, here's the money. Do something else with it, okay? All right? That's what they're trying to do. Don't buy treasuries. And, I mean, at some point it has to work, because I think people are less scared of investing right now than they were, because the stock market right now is an all-time high it's close to all-time high back, going all the way back to 2000 right now. So if that doesn't entice you to go and invest, I don't know what the fuck will.
Okay, so we're actually, we've gone on a while, so I don't know if we want to do a whole segment on the iPhone. Do we want to do the really short recap on the iPhone as I switch topics rapidly? Is
it launched
and it was pretty much everything said it was going to be, you know, and apparently
they sold out already.
They sold out in like an hour of their initial run. But if you pre-order one now, you'll still probably get one 2-3 weeks down the road.
Right.
You know, they're selling like hotcakes and. You know, I mean, we're thinking of getting. We've got this family, my family, all three of us have iPhone 4s. Well, Alex doesn't, but you know.
No, you fucking...
He plays with our phones all the time, and we quote-unquote gave him one of our own iPhone 3s without the contract anymore, so... but he never uses that one. He likes using ours better.
Bastard, you.
Yeah, I know. But poor deprived kid. Anyway, we will probably get them. There's a question of timing and when we'll do it.
I will buy one, but my upgrade time is not until December, so I will patiently wait.
We may do something. We are all eligible for upgrades right now, but we may wait towards the end of the year anyway. The bottom line is we have fours. We've been on an every other iPhone cycle, and it's every other iPhone now. So, yeah.
The only thing I noticed was kind of like funny today was that Samsung quickly put out this ad, which I you know what? I always think you show desperation and weakness when in your ad you mention somebody else's product.
Mm.
And that's what Samsung did this morning. Okay, they went and, you know, they put an ad in which this looks like this hastily put together table of features of the Galaxy S3 versus the iPhone 5 on it. Okay, all right, saying it doesn't take a genius, that the next big thing's already here, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but you know what? When I was reading it, I was thinking about the table and I'm like thinking, you know what, Samsung, you guys didn't really think this ad through very well, did you? So you're showing that your phone is 0.8 inches bigger than the iPhone, but yet it has almost the same resolution added. So basically, it takes you like about to make a phone that's 25% bigger because it weighs 25% more to get the same resolution on one screen. That's not really impressing me, okay? And so you see this table that's like of stuff and like standard micro USB plug or a totally different plug. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to tell me the USB 2.0 is the same as Thunderbolt? Okay. Somebody really was like, I need to put something out there and put this thing up. And I'm just like, I don't think it's such a great idea. I just think it's never a good idea when you do advertising that you are directly talking about the competitor's product. It's just never been a good idea, and Samsung felt compelled to do so.
Yep. Anyway, we may have more to say next week or not. I mean, it wasn't. There's not much that was surprising, so I don't know.
Everything leaked out in advance. Even the pictures of like how it looked. I mean, they were pretty darn close to the final product.
Yep. So anyway, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's gonna sell like crazy. You know,
it's gonna sell like crazy. I mean, and I think that
it already has,
and you know, I think that for the most part, I mean, I think it's, I, you know what, the thing people keep saying, whether Apple has like screwed up something, or whatever. And I was looking the other day, we're talking about what other phone as a model has really been as popular as the iPhone, and the only equivalent that's really existed in the last 10 years in the U.S. was the Razr. Okay. Mm. It is the only telephone model that is sold like this. Okay, here's the difference about the Razr and this one. I was looking at this. Motorola launched a Razr in late 2003 and didn't launch an upgrade to the Razr until 2008. It took them 5 years. Okay, Apple has issued substantial upgrades to the iPhone, both the hardware and the software, almost basically annually since the first iPhone was launched. And I think that's the key difference between what happened to the Razr franchise and why Motorola just couldn't sustain that versus Apple. Apple has been very, you know, consistent about both issuing software and hardware updates consistently every year, whereas Motorola went and like launched a phone that was a breakthrough, that was a hit, that, by the way, was a phone I loved when it came out. I got to tell you something, because I bought a couple of versions. I bought a couple of those phones. But they didn't follow it up. You were the next year wondering, okay, when's the next one coming out? And they just sat on it. I think that that's the one thing that shows us important in this. It's changed like right now. Hardware and software need to be continuously evolving in order for you to maintain an edge out there. And even if what you do, maybe some guy comes out with a product that's just slightly better, slightly this, slightly that. If you're maintaining the momentum and you keep doing it, you know, until, you know, it's kind of difficult to take away that lead that you built up. That's what it's looking at like right now. But we shall see.
Yep, we shall see. Okay, and that's the show. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com, or hey, Yvonne gave you his email address too. Or, you know, follow me on Twitter, I'm at abelsmay. Google Plus, I'm at abelsmay. You know, wherever you think I probably am, I'm probably abelsmay. Send me questions and comments and thoughts, and we'd be glad to talk about them on the show.
I will say this, my computer for some reason keeps thinking your email is junk, but, you know, despite me telling it, it isn't, but...
You bastard.
I know.
You're just a fucking bastard.
I know, and I keep telling it, no, it's not junk.
Well, I guess there's at least that, but, you know, it probably knows what you truly feel about me.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway, we're out of here, guys. Tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.